This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You are listening to the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state of the art L shaped studios at beautiful and serene Hoho Loon Plaza. Vancouver, British Columbia, Greg Phillips and Nick Duke are the hard-traveling fanboys.
You're listening to the longest-running weekly episode of comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. We
Good
are
Lord.
Here on the news of this biggest news in the world of comics. I'm Greg Phillips, he's Nick Duke with the hard-traveling fanboys in a digest edition of this week's podcast.
That's right, Greg.
Why are we trying to take so much time? Stop taking so much time!
Good
We've
Lord.
We've got to get the news.
Good Lord. Now, don't you ever think about stopping and selling, working a body part, telling a story? Instead of go, 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 go all the time?
All that flippy shit just sold out Chicago, 10,000 seats.
Yeah, dude. And all the real wrestling just sold out 70,000 seats at the Superdome. So don't tell me about flippy shit.
Sounds to me like somebody is living in the past. Were you gonna reminisce on the days in Mid-South wrestling? You drew 5,000 to the Civic Center.
Well, I personally have never drawn any money to an arena, but I know an individual who has. But that's neither here nor there.
In all seriousness, folks, welcome to the Hard Traveling Fanboys. I am Greg Phillips. That luscious and wonderful voice on the other end of the line is Nick Duke, and no, ladies, he's not single. And we are bringing you an episode of our running series known as Countdown.
There it is. You got there, Vitaly.
In which we count down things of various sorts in the world of comics. Favorite things, least favorite things. You know how it's the entire internet at this point, Nick.
Yeah, except ours is not typically five things that are totally awesome and four that totally aren't or something like that. We just
right.
do
15 reasons yeah. you have got to do something that we want you to do.
15 reasons why Gotham is the best Batman show of all time and also the worst. What does that even mean?
And in full disclosure, this is going to be a condensed digest size 1940s newsreel like edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys because I am out on assignment right now in the swamps of Florida.
Mm-mm. Nope.
I mean, what is the assignment that I'm on? I don't know, but I am on assignment down here, cursed with beaches and stormy weather and relatives. So it's certainly a hodgepodge, and maybe they could even make a list of the 15 best things about this vacation and the 14 worst.
And the 14 worst, yeah. You know, this episode of the podcast is going to be kind of like, to draw a baseball analogy. You know how sometimes a hitter has like a 30-game hitting streak going or a long hitting streak, and yet his team is down like 10 runs in the ninth inning, and he's trying to keep that hitting streak alive, and he drops down a meaningless bunt to keep the streak alive, even though it has no real impact or quality about it. That's essentially what this podcast is. Just something to keep our weekly episodic streak alive.
That's right. We don't have a Brock Lesnar in our lives, folks. We don't have anyone who can conquer the streak because our streak continues. And we're going to start continuing that streak. You know what, Nick? I can think of no better time than right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're counting down this week is our top five active comic book writers not named Jeff Johns.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Johns is only active in the most technical of senses because of Doomsday Clock right now. Kind of been out of the monthly comics game for some time, so I felt it would be a little
feel that you, the audience, is, quite frankly, tired of having your intelligence insulted.
I would agree wholeheartedly, so
let's kick off the HTF Countdown Attitude Era, Nick.
Yeah, let's do it. So, the Countdown, you want me to go ahead? Are you going to go ahead?
I'll start out. I'll go at number five.
Top five active writers. Here we go.
On our list. And my number five entrant mm-hmm. none other than Dan Abnett.
Ooh. Ooh.
He is the current scribe mm-hmm. of Aquaman,
mm-hmm.
as well as Titans
mm-hmm.
and the Mira miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you may know him from his past working with Andy Lanning on a number of works, most notably Guardians of the Galaxy. And basically, Abnett kind of snuck up on me because I hadn't been exposed to his writing a lot over the years. In my comeback to comics in the 2000s, I was primarily a DC reader, and I read his Guardians for our show actually a couple years ago. I thought it was good, but it wasn't anything that made me think he was any different from his writing cohort. But since he's been on his own writing for DC and the Rebirth Initiative, he has written what, in my opinion, has become a classic Aquaman run that has really picked up some of the work that Geoff Johns did on the title back during the New 52 and taken it in a different direction, but an almost equally as good direction, honestly. Like his Aquaman has been a book that has foregone a lot of the action tropes that you would expect of the ruler of a nation kind of a story. And it's really gone almost in a political direction that I would say, Nick, kind of reminds me of Black Panther in some ways, in terms of its focus. But I really enjoy the way that he writes Dick Grayson and Wally West in particular, and also Donna Troy. I think he writes the key, I would consider them the three key characters in Titans, and he writes them really, really well. So I very much enjoyed his work.
Absolutely. Glad to hear that. But you mentioned putting Abnett on your list mainly because of a run on a classic superhero during the Rebirth era. And that's what my number five finds himself on the list for as well, as I'm going with Tom King at number five. Undoubtedly, we've said so many times on this show and in the column, Greg, that you never want to be the guy that follows the guy. And Tom King was put in that unenviable position of being the guy to follow Scott Snyder and his classic New 52 Batman run into the Rebirth era. And at first, admittedly, there was a little bit of shaky ground, but really over the last 30 or so, or 30 to 35 issues, the book has found its footing and has really become distinct from Snyder's, and yet, I won't say it's as good, but it is defining itself as a classic Batman run in its own right. Basically, once the whole Bruce and Catwoman romance was made a main focus of the book has really just taken off. He writes Bruce so well. He writes so many of the villains so well. He's been paired up with some of the most, just some of the best Batman artists in recent memory, in Mikael Janin and David Ching, or no, not David Ching. What's his name? Fuck. God almighty.
David
Finch.
Joel Jones.
I have Georgia beat writers on the mind for some reason.
I didn't know if they're. Well, I don't know what they were actually.
I knew what they were.
Names.
No, it was David Finch and David Ching, David Finch. Who gives a shit?
Who's the character that? Who's the character that David's going to voice in our unnamed project that we haven't officially announced yet?
I do not remember.
Doctor something.
Doctor Ting.
Doctor Ching.
Doctor Ting.
Ting.
Yeah,
that's right.
But anyway, Tom King, excellent Batman run. Has a handle on pretty much all the characters, has inserted elements into a Batman story that have rarely, if ever, been there before, what in terms of Bruce trying to be content in both his personal and crime-fighting lives. Just an all-time great Batman run, as far as I'm concerned, which, of course, is me essentially saying that, yes, Tom King is indeed killing it on Batman.
Yes, I've had, as you know, kind of a mixed experience with King's Batman. I've come to appreciate it more since he introduced the Batman-Catwoman dynamic, and he has written some of my favorite single-issue Batman stories in years. He's also, I haven't read a lot of his other stuff, but he's renowned for stuff like Omega Men and, of course, The Vision. And I hope to get around to reading all of those at some point. I think he did Omega Men. I may be wrong on that, but
he did.
Let's just stick with it for now. So my number four position mm-hmm. in a little bit of perhaps a surprise with his placement on here, and it's more due to the way things fluctuate. If we're doing all time, he actually finished higher in my all time than he would in my active.
Mm-hmm.
But number four, I've got Scott Snyder.
Mm.
He is, of course, the legendary now scribe of Batman for the New 52. He wrote a classic run alongside his artist partner, Greg Capullo. And if we were doing this list 2 years ago, he would have been number one with a bullet. But I feel like, and maybe I'm off here because I haven't actively read as much stuff as I should have in recent years. But I feel like I don't want to say his work is tapering off, but it's just his tastes are changing and they're skewing more in directions that interest me less. If that makes sense?
Yeah, well, absolutely makes sense.
He's kind of whereas I loved his Batman run at its grittiest and most grounded in some ways. With stuff like Zero Year, it feels like in the last couple of years, even with All-Star Batman, but then beyond that, which was still pretty good, didn't blow me away what I read of it. But then there was like, you know, he got into the metal stuff, and metal, as we've talked about on the show, just wasn't up my wheelhouse. Maybe I'll like it better whenever I eventually read it. But and now hearing what he's doing with No Justice is a little out there, too, although I've heard good things about that. But I haven't read, and I've read a few issues here and there over the last couple of years. I haven't read anything by him that has really blown me away, I think, since the end of Endgame, which was his second to last arc, I think, on Batman, or maybe his last arc. No, second to last arc, right? On Batman. And so I'm hoping that maybe some of their stuff has fallen through the cracks, but nonetheless, even though that's not a negative, I still love the guy. I still think he's got an incredible handle of how to write characters, how to write compelling dialogue. I think he understands intrigue and mystery and how to build a larger narrative better than almost any other comic book writer right now. He is a master of that Geoff Johns style of long-form storytelling, setting the pieces in place and paying it off in the end. And so... Scott Snyder is my number four.
I also have more to say about that in just a moment. But my number four is Dan Abnett, who Greg already mentioned. So I will just echo all of Greg's thoughts. His Aquaman run has been outstanding. In my opinion, in my highly uninformed opinion, the second greatest Aquaman run of all time, behind only the master himself, Geoff Johns. And his Titans, as Greg said, has been damn fine storytelling as well. So, honestly, as much as I love the Geoff Johns run, I think the Dan has actually been more of like what my ideal Aquaman run would be in my head, if that makes sense. Like, leaning into the political aspects, leaning into the idea of him being a world figure on the stage and not just a superhero. So while I think the Johns run is executed better, I think the Abnett stuff is actually a little bit more up my own personal alley. But that's neither here nor there. He has been outstanding thus far during his tenure at DC, and I can't wait to see what he does in the future. So Dan Abnett for me at number four.
Yeah. Decent, fair minds to like.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to my number three, and this is one that actually shocked me, Nick, when I was putting my list together, because I don't read Marvel as much as I should. Perhaps, hopefully, that'll change in the near future, but at my number three, I took a guy that I thought about who are the writers whose work that I've read the last couple of years that every time I pick something up, it just blows me away, and I had to go at number three with Jason Aaron. And it's not just for his Marvel work either, by the way, because he also writes Southern Bastards, which is outstanding. Every issue I've read of it has been outstanding. You know, we've reviewed, I think, first volume, maybe the second volume as well. I'm not sure, but we've talked about it here on the show. It's a brilliant book that captures Southern life so accurately, so perfectly, and yet so entertainingly. And then on top of that, his Thor work has been magnificent. And a little bit of this is recency bias for me because I did read the free comic book day offering from Marvel. That was a preview of Jason Aaron's Avengers. And I thought it was easily, without any qualification, the single best and most intriguing start to an Avengers story that I've read since I came back to comics 15 years ago or whatever it was. I've tried so many different Avengers runs. I tried Bendis at various points. I tried the Jonathan Hickman run. They had a free comic book day offering a couple years ago, and I tried the Hickman run and didn't get into it at all. I tried the Mark Waid stuff, didn't get into it. This free comic book day offering was spectacular. instantly made me care about these characters, define these characters for me and why they were needed and who they were. And I think the weird thing, Nick, if this makes sense, it almost felt like a DC story set in Marvel with Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be why I loved it so much. It very, you know, you're dealing with cosmic godlike entities and you're dealing with a more mythical approach to the Avengers than maybe we've seen at other times. I was a huge fan of it. And so Jason Aaron is my number three, and I am actually looking forward to, albeit possibly on a delay on Marvel Unlimited, catching up with his Avengers run, because I think it's going to be something special.
Once again, I will defer comment on this until later in the countdown and move on to my number three, which once again will echo one of your selections, and I've got Scott Snyder at my number three. Much like Greg said, this is more a rational selection at this point than it is necessarily reflective of his current output. What I'm saying here is that anytime I see a Scott Snyder's name on a book, I'm likely to check it out at least. He has earned that level of respect for me. He's earned that level mm-hmm. of faith from me. That being said, stuff like Metal, not really up my alley. Aspects of All-Star Batman were not good, but then aspects of All-Star Batman were phenomenal, top-notch Scott Snyder-style Batman. So it was a very conflicting series in that regard. But, well, much like you, I've heard positive things about No Justice. I've wanted a Scott Snyder Justice League for a long time, and so I will be there in just a few when he takes over DC's flagship book and hopefully restores it to prominence. When he's at his best, and when he is doing stories that speak to me personally, there may not be anyone better in the comics game. So a little bit unusual to have him so low, but he's going to be at number three as of right now.
And there's no other comic writer who, when you say his name, makes you think of Scott Steiner as quickly as Scott Snyder.
Or of Zack Snyder.
That's true also. That is true also. Well, let me move on to my number two, because with my number two, I want to get religious on you, Nick, because I need a priest.
Oh, God. Yep.
And I need Christopher Priest at my number two spot. Christopher Priest, longtime writer of Black Panther, which we actually reviewed the beginning of his run right here on the Longbook Hunters a few months ago, and loved it. Actually thought it was better than the first volume of the Ta-Nehisi Coates Black Panther run, which was also good. And I'm not judging him based on that. However, I am judging him based on his work with Deathstroke, as well as the one issue of his Justice League that I read off the newsstand, which was excellent. Not the newsstand. What is this, the 90s?
The newsstand. Got it at the grocery store checkout counter, did you?
The spinner rack.
Yep.
Remember, it used to be like comic books on there instead of soap opera digests. Or if you're me, both. I got into Justice League and really enjoyed it. Thought the characterizations were so much more on point than what we had gotten before in the Brian Hitch run. Yeah, that's it. That's his name. That's the ticket.
That's the guy.
But go ahead.
I said that's the guy.
That's him. Yeah. So Priest's Deathstroke. It's no secret if you listen to the podcast. It was one of my favorite books in comics when I was still actively keeping up with all the books I was buying, which has been quite some time. But he just writes in a way that's so refreshing. He stays true to the character, which is, I think, the most important thing when you're taking over iconic characters from Marvel or DC. You have to be true to the character. You cannot skew the character to be the way that you want him to be if he's never been that way before, if it counteracts his basic truth of the character. And I think Priest has maintained that with Deathstroke, maintain that with all the supporting cast, but he's also infused his own sensibilities. In other words, yes, it's Deathstroke. Yes, he's a cold-blooded assassin, but yes, it might have been the funniest book in my list for the last year of it. Basically, that a book about a stone-cold assassin that managed to make me laugh out loud at least once per issue because of how freaking great Priest's writing was. And the art in this book was very good, don't get me wrong, but this is a book where the appeal was 90% the writing, 10% the art. And a lot of books aren't like that, but that was this case because he has a way of writing dialogue that I think may be better than just about anyone in comics, certainly currently. And his way of progressing these complicated plots. I mentioned earlier about Scott Snyder, Nick, that he's great at laying the building blocks for future things. Priest does that same thing, and maybe even on a different level, because there will be things that you think are irrelevant that make no sense, and then suddenly run is over now. But I hope his work with DC continues and he gets some other characters thrown his way, because he could probably do a lot to revitalize interest in a lot of these characters that might have sagged in interest in recent years. Put him on Green Arrow if you get a chance at some point. You know, he's a guy that just gets it, and I'm so excited to read anything with name on it.
Yeah, I can't really comment from a place of knowledge here, as I've read none of the Deathstroke, and practically all the Chris Priest I've read is you know, pre-2000, but I know you've been high on him for a long time, so I'm not surprised to hear him on your list. Much like you won't be surprised to hear this individual high on my list at my number two select spot, I have got, you know, another situation where this guy would be unquestionably I don't know. He might be here on an all-time list. It would be a tight race between he and Geoff Johns for me personally. But at my number two spot, I'm going with Brian Michael Bendis.
Wow. I thought for sure he'd be your number one.
Because he is technically no longer an employee of Marvel Comics and is now the sole Superman writer. I have him not at number one, but at number two.
Two. Very interesting, Nick. That, I think this is our first, maybe our first real upset of the list. Perhaps both of us having Scott Snyder a little lower than people might have expected. But I think this is a surprise. I had him pegged for your number one. But what you said makes sense. And I think both of us were maybe a tad underwhelmed by his Superman previews, although I think the second one may be a little bit better than the first.
I was actually a pretty big fan of the DC Nation one that was entirely focused on the planet, which I knew that he would be good at those aspects of Superman. I knew that like the planet stuff was going to be great under him. It was the Superman himself, you know, the Superman bits of it that were in Action Comics 1000 that were supremely underwhelming.
Understandable. Well, let me, without any further, without any further ado, let me get to my number one selection. And this is a guy that is not actively writing for DC or Marvel. Doesn't write a superhero at all right now. But when I sat down to make my list the other day, and I was thinking about which writers are can't miss for me right now, which writers do I pick up their work and I'm never, ever, ever disappointed. And this guy's name was at the top of that list. And my number one is Ed Brubaker. He is a guy who I don't read his monthly comics, but I pick up trades when I can of whatever it may be that he is writing. And in this case, Fatale, I've read recently, which is a great story with him and Sean Phillips. Criminal, an anthology series with him and Sean Phillips. Sleeper, Kill or Be Killed, which I know is a popular book of our friends, Russell and David. They both love it. Everything that this guy writes turns to gold. You want to pick up a book of his from 15 years ago, Gotham Central. Great. Batman, great. Captain America, great. You want to pick up a book off the stands right now, like Fatale, great. Criminal, great. Sleeper, great. All of that stuff. Amazing. I can't remember the name of it. One about old Hollywood that he did that's supposedly great that I've had sitting in my box of trade collections for about a year now and just haven't gotten to. But this is a guy that, you know, I can't say that. Like Jason Aaron, sometimes I didn't like Jason Aaron's Wolverine that much or his X-Men stuff that much. But like or Scott Snyder, I mentioned, you know, I don't think Metal is necessarily going to be for me. And I wasn't nuts about some of the last couple issues of his Batman run. But like you pick up anything from Brubaker, and I don't think I've ever read, at least that I can remember, a comic from Brubaker that I didn't like. It's really incredible the level of craftsmanship and consistency he has. I truly hope that one day, and I know that there's no reason for him to feel this way, but I would love one day for him to come back to the superhero genre and get a crack writing any character he wants. I don't care, but let's just say the Flash or Green Lantern or any character he wants to write, he would do a bang-up, amazing job on. Spider-Man, I don't know if they've written Spider-Man. He would probably be a great Spider-Man writer. So Ed Brubaker is my number one, and I feel pretty confident of, even though, again, I don't read his single issues, I read his trades.
Yeah, I don't read much of any of his stuff anymore, but I'm obviously familiar with his previous work for Marvel and DC, and obviously a big fan of that I've read. We will undoubtedly be addressing some of his work here in the near future on the Long Book Hunters, probably. My process of elimination, most people have probably figured out my number one by now, but at number one, I'm going to go with another guy that Greg has already mentioned earlier, and that, of course, is Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron.
What is there that I can say about Jason Aaron that I haven't already said so many times on these airwaves? His writing is able to seamlessly blend drama, humor, action, and long-form storytelling in a way that I have not seen this side of Geoff Johns, honestly. Like, whenever I read Jason Aaron, I always think to myself, this guy is essentially the Marvel Geoff Johns. I mean, he's become that important, and he's become that consistent in terms of quality across the board. And it doesn't hurt for me personally when he is still in the midst of what I consider to be the definitive run on one of my favorite characters in all of comics, that, of course, being the Mighty Thor. His Thor Got a Thunder run, which led straight into Thor, which led straight into the Mighty Thor, which is leading back into Thor again, is just, there's nothing I can say about it that I haven't already said so many times, but when he is at the peak of his powers, he is absolutely untouchable as a comics writer. And Greg alluded to it earlier, his Avengers run, I'm here to tell you, it starts off with a bang. It's very good so far, and I will talk a little bit more about that after the break.
And it's all leading to his upcoming title about the son of Thor, Thorson.
Thorson, yes. Yes, and we will, of course, be addressing that on a future edition of Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater.
Exactly. Well, there you have it, folks. Our list, Nick Duke and Greg Phillips' list of our favorite active comic book writers. We want to hear yours. Send us your list to Twitter at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. Email us at gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com, or do what all the cool kids are doing and go to Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook. Uh-huh. Join the group. You can join in all the great discussions we're having about cartoons and what, and you can join the club. And if you want to, we'll even let you talk about your Atlanta break.
Oh ho ho!
And who doesn't want to do that? So let us know your lists. Send those in. Get them going. We will talk about them on the air if you send them in, if we can remember to, which we very rarely do. But if we do, we'll talk about them on the air. And with that being said, we're going to take a little break. When we get back on the other side, we're not going to do the rundown, but we are going to have reading and watching. So stay with us, unless you don't want to.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and Pod Blast on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaySpeedNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySpeedNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpeedNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back, Place to Be Nation listeners, with the rest of the story. And I am here to be your Paul Harvey. Nick is here to be your Paul Feinbaum. We are going to sniff and over-explain our ways through the rest of this podcast. As I mentioned, we are foregoing the rundown due to time constraints this week, due to me being on location. And Nick, how are things in the studio, by the way, up there in Vancouver in Hoholoon Plaza?
Oh, they're beautiful and serene as always.
Excellent, excellent news. Any word from the ticker on Hoholoon's employment status?
Sadly, the ticker remains dormant.
Oh well. Thought it was worth a chance. But anyway, we are going to get right into our segment where we talk about what we've been reading and watching. It's a segment we like to call Reading and Watching. What you been reading and watching? Now, Nick, I have been reading something, and what have you been reading?
Oh, I read a shit ton this week. With our stories finally dropping off, what with Black Lightning ending and Walking Dead being no longer a thing, I've been watching a lot of sports and reading a lot of comics as I watch the sports. So here they are, very quickly as I can give them. Batman 46, outstanding, continues the Booster Gold storyline that I am loving. Reminds me a lot of Perchance to Dream, like Tom King's own little take on Perchance to Dream, honestly, which I know would be right up your alley. Detective Comics 979. Much in that same vein, just continues an outstanding run by James Tynion IV, who, by the way, narrowly missed my list from earlier in the program. He probably would have been my number six for doing a top six. Speeding towards a conclusion of this story and bringing in some of the classic elements from the Infinite Crisis era of Batman, such as the Omax and Brother Eye into this story, and that's been very enjoyable. And as I teased, Jason Aaron's Avenger number one, outstanding, in my opinion. From the jump, he is already demonstrating a mastery of the dynamic between the so-called big three of Thor, Cap, and Tony, while also laying this deep mythological background with the Avengers of 1 million BC, which of course sounds ridiculous, but is awesome in execution, especially getting to see Odin thirsting after the Phoenix, which is one of my favorite aspects of that entire team dynamic.
Tony, if Buffer were to announce Jason Aaron to the ring, what would he call him? Would it be something to do with his mastery?
The master of all things Marvel, I guess. I don't know. Stop asking stupid questions. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps 43 continues the momentum of this run. It's outstanding. Action Comics Special number 1. That was all right. Green Arrow number 40. It sucked. Wonder Woman 41 through 45.
What the hell? You can't just say that. Who wrote this? Who was behind this Green Arrow book? It sucked.
Some person named Kelly. And also people named Lansing, Takara, and Maiolo. It sucked. Wonder Woman, 41 through 45, written by James Robinson. They're all right. Spider-Man, 238 through 240, Brian Michael Bendis' farewell to the character. The only downside of these three issues, Greg, was apparently there was an issue with the normal artist on the book, who I'm spacing on the name of right now, and they had to pull in a replacement artist who was not up to snuff, so it's a little disappointing to see subpar art on Bendis's final three Miles Morales issues, but nonetheless, these were outstanding. A 240-issue run of dating all the way back to 2000 with Ultimate Spider-Man has finally come to an end. Only constant of my 16-year comics fandom is over. A very bittersweet feeling, especially reading Bendis's 2-page goodbye letter to the fans who have been with him along the way. Star Wars 40 through 47. They were pretty good. I can't really break them down because there's so much. Good Lord, I was so behind on comics. Green Lanterns 36 through 46.
Good Lord.
36 through 46. This, of course, is now into the Tim Seeley era of Green Lanterns, which starts off pretty slow, honestly, with the Bolfunga storyline, but then picks up pretty well, went to a storyline called Superhuman Trafficking, and then is especially gets really good as it gets into a storyline called Ghosts of the Past, which is focused entirely on Jessica Cruz's early days and like kind of the origin of her anxiety and stuff like that. So it's been a cool exploration of her character, in my opinion. And then finally, the Defenders 8, 9, and 10. This wraps up Brian Michael Bendis and David Marquez's run on this title. Wraps up the title. It ends at tissues. I very much enjoyed it. It did that classic thing that Bendis sometimes, where 9 really feels like the finale, so to speak, and then 10 is kind of this emotional coda, really, where it's just all these fan service moments you want to see, and kind of just winks and nods that Bendis is trying to send you out with. So loved all of that. So I read a bunch of comics, but did not want to take the time. I know we're strapped for time here to go through every single issue.
See, I was getting all ready to bury you for dropping the softball that I lobbed you. The master of juggling multiple story arcs. But you had the emotional story about Brian Michael Bendis, so I can't bury you in that situation. I can't top that. Great moment for you, a fan. You've been supporting this guy for, you know, since you got into comics, really. Mm-hmm. So I know it's a big thing to see. And who knows? Maybe when it's all said and done, perhaps his Superman run will surprise you.
Maybe it will. And I have a sneaking suspicion that we have not, you know, for a long time, we have not seen the last of Brian Michael Bendis at Marvel. And whenever he does come back one day, it will be a big deal. And that's why I've said all along, despite my apprehensions about the DC move, I think it's one of those things that is best for all parties involved. It's kind of like the old wrestling territory days. You go away for a little while, give the audience a chance to miss you, so that way when you come back, you're even bigger than you were when you left. So
even Terry Funk came back.
That's right. Even
after
Terry
retirement.
Funk. So there you go.
So with me, I have read two of the – or actually – 1.75 of the free comic book day offerings that I took home from Marvel and DC, respectively. I read, of course, I mentioned the Jason Aaron Avengers preview that came on free comic book day and thought it was excellent.
And see, I actually haven't read that. I've read the number one issue, but have not read the free comic book day issue yet.
The free comic book day preview was excellent. It basically made it seem like we're getting ready to watch the Avengers take on the Anti-Monitor.
It seems like a similar thing is happening in the first issue.
And that speaks to me on a lot of levels, primarily the always gravitating more towards DC than Marvel level. So I'm super into that concept. And love the way he wrote the Avengers 1 million BC. Love the exploration of Black Panther's history, and making him a key player in this was a very smart move on the part of Aaron and Marvel. So loved it. Also read the preview of Ta-Nehisi Coates' upcoming Captain America run. Thought it was okay. I didn't think it was amazing. I thought it was good. But I will say there's enough there to make me think it's going to be great. Again, he plays the slow game. We talked about that when we reviewed his Black Panther run. Coates tends to start out slow and play the long form game. And I think that's going to be the case here as well, primarily because I don't think Nuke is a terribly interesting villain. But I think that going forward, and I hope I got the guy's name right, Nuke, but I think that was his name.
Yes.
I don't think he's a compelling villain, but I think going forward, this concept that is introduced of this kind of cabal of government operatives within Marvel trying to, you know, surreptitiously protect the country, so to speak, is an interesting idea that I think Coates will explore. The DC Nation issue that I got, I have not read the Justice League preview. I did read the Brian Michael Bendis Superman preview with Jose Luis Garcia art, and thought it was better than the preview that we saw with Jim Lee art. Even though the art was spectacular in the Jim Lee one, I thought this one actually did more to hook me, because it was a lot of Daily Planet stuff, as you mentioned, Nick, and I really like that. I do still have some concerns, primarily about the use of Lois, but we'll see where that goes. What else was in that issue, Nick? I can't remember.
The Batman story.
The Joker story was excellent. Absolutely excellent. I thought it was, and we already talked about this on the show. I apologize if we have. I don't remember. But nonetheless, it was great. It was one of the best Joker stories I've read in a long time. So loved it. Thought it was right out of the animated series. And that's it. That's all I got for reading.
Yep, that's it for me as well.
All right. Now, let's go on to watching. Should we start with the CW, Nick?
If that's what you want to start with, up to you.
Let's start with the CW. I'm still behind on Supergirl. So, Nick, how was Supergirl?
It was very good. Unexpected developments at the end of this most recent episode, to say the least. I don't want to spoil anything for you, and to do anything more would to say anything more would definitely spoil some things for you. I want you to get the opportunity to catch up. But was not expecting what happens at the end of that episode, and I think it sets up a very intriguing final stretch for the show.
I will say I finished off the episode with Wynn's mom, which mm-hmm. was very, you know, uneventful and ho-hum. Then followed it up by watching the episode where John Jones's dad, yes. who is getting dementia, is losing control of his mental abilities, basically. His
fantastic abilities. Fantastic
was phenomenal.
Episode.
Yeah. One of, in my opinion, maybe controversially, I don't know, one of the best Supergirl episodes that I can remember, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought it was excellent, and it's no surprise that it was excellent when it focused on those two characters, because instantly, even though he's only been in maybe 5-6 episodes to this point, John's dad has become one of my favorite characters on the show, and maybe one of my favorite characters in the CW-verse. He's great, and I think they're approaching a very difficult subject with about as much tact and class as you can.
Yeah, I would agree, especially from a CW superhero show. You know, there's only so much you can do with right. with the audience and the demographic you're aiming towards, and I think they're doing it as well as they possibly can.
Yep. Tuesday night brought us to The Flash, mm-hmm. where we saw the team reaching out to Amunet Black, who is a former villain we've seen on the show, for her help in taking down Clifford DeVoe's satellite, and also helping Caitlin's search for the return of Killer Frost.
Right. Cut through the bullshit and talk about what we're here to talk about.
Well, take it over.
Well, then, now who else did they reach out to? Not just Amunet Black, but the Council of Wells.
Council of Wells
made its long-awaited return, only to see Harry, our beloved Harry, booted off because he was becoming, quote, a dum-dum. and yeah, to join.
But that's okay. Yes. It's the Council of Harrisons to pick him up, right?
What was it? Was it called that? I thought it was called something else.
I thought it was the Council of Harrisons, but I don't remember. Whatever.
But it was outstanding. We get to see the return of McConaughey, Harrison, or Wells, as I call him, and the additions of French poet Wells and what was the other one? New Yorker Guido Wells.
Yes. Guido Wells, yes.
And it was awesome.
It was tremendous. And I have to say, increasingly dumb Harry is just as great as really smart Harry.
I don't know that I would necessarily agree with that, but he's managed to stay entertaining and intriguing.
The Council of Harrisons was great. That part was the great part of the episode. Honestly, I know she's hallowed ground for geeks, even though I don't really know the show that she comes from. But Amunet Black, it just doesn't do it for me ever when she shows up. I find her a boring character, and I find the episodes that star her typically to be boring episodes about boring character doing boring things.
I mean, she brings a certain energy to the role that I understand is supposed to be the draw. Yeah. But the problem is she's never given anything to do that's interesting enough for that energy to matter. And that's the issue, I think. The portrayal itself is fine. It's just the character is horseshit.
I never bought into the conceit that she was going to help them beat DeVoe. I never bought into that. So that was a problem for me. But overall, fine. I mean,
It was okay.
Even when Flash has a down week, it's still, it's at baseline entertaining. Right. So, not bad. Now, Thursday brings us Arrow, the latest, the penultimate episode of this season of Arrow, and another badass episode in a string of badass episodes.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Getting to see more development of the Diaz character, which is something that probably should have been happening earlier in the season so that the middle portion of the season would not have struggled as much as it did. But, hard to complain too much when we're getting such a strong run of episodes at this point. And finally, it seems like the writers have said, you know what, let's just do away with that whole new Team Arrow versus old Team Arrow dynamic and just get back to them coexisting for now. I'm intrigued to watch the season finale and see where that is left. Enjoyed this one. Continues the momentum.
Yeah, this one had another string of great action scenes, great fight scenes, more development for Diaz, and one of the most badass scenes that I've ever seen on network television with, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. You have something stuck in your throat. Fucking badass.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So there you are. There are our thoughts on the CW for the week. Yep.
It's really not fair to rank them. I mean, Arrow was better, but
Arrow. But I would go Arrow, Supergirl, Flash based on this week, but they were all pretty good.
So, and I know, Nick, that you also have watched a movie, and I believe that it was a 2.5-hour version of the incestuous redheaded twins singing Don't Pull Your Love Out, baby, right?
If only. No, I have been to the theater, and I have seen the glory that is Deadpool 2, and I will withhold most of my comments.
Deadpool 2.
For Deadpool 2. For fear of possibly anything for my cohort. So I will give more in-depth thoughts next week probably on the show, but suffice it to say, if you are a fan of the first movie, you will love this one. It is very much in that same tone. They know the formula, they know what works, and they stick to it while also ramping up the jokes, taking some of the gags from the first one to the next level for sure. And as we will discuss on next week's show, in my opinion, the greatest post-credit scene of all time.
Wow. High praise from the Dukester.
Mm-hmm.
High praise from the Dukester. Well, I haven't seen it. I hope to see it at some point this coming week. Looking forward to that one for sure. And I am also getting ready for the day after we record this, I'll be getting my third viewing of Avengers Infinity War. So that'll be fun. So Anyway, with all that being said, I mean, gosh, Nick, anything else you can think of that we've left out of the show other than a lot of stuff?
No, nothing other than the entire rundown, of course.
Right. And we're also not going to do the wrestling minute on account of the fact that I haven't been able to watch much wrestling this week. I would say Nakamura and AJ was pretty awesome.
And your boys are going to see a New Japan wrestling show live and in person.
That is right. That's a big announcement, folks. The Hard Traveling Fanboys, along with Hard Traveling friend Andrew Chandler Frazier Garner, the 45th, are going to be We're taking over Daytona Beach at the end of June to watch Kenny Omega's New Japan Pro Wrestling show. It was a can't-miss opportunity for us, about a six-hour drive, Nick, and I think it's going to be worth the trip to get this out of the way.
Absolutely. To my knowledge, their first ever Southeastern U.S. show, even though it is technically Kenny promoting it and not, you know, the New Japan office themselves, but still, New Japan roster, New Japan talent, New Japan matches, I'm pumped.
That's right. And who knows? You could run into anyone in Daytona Beach, maybe even Abdullah the Butcher, legend wrestler.
Ooh.
We can only hope.
You know, Abdullah, he beat Killer Khan, Bruiser Brody, and Stan Hansen.
I heard about that. And so, Nick, before we go off the air this week, I have one question that I want to leave the listeners out here with.
Oh, boy.
Before we leave
here
get ready for next
comes.
Week. Nick, will you please, before next week's show, will you gig me like the Butcher? See you next week, folks.
Hard traveling fanboys.